From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for June 24th, 2022. Checking the busy calendar, it's the first weekend of Summerfest. It's Strawberry Fest in Cedarburg, and it's Margarita Fest in the Deer District, and the Brewers are home with the Blue Jays. Sounds like a pretty full weekend. Let's start with an interesting look at Japanese culture. 40% of unmarried Japanese men in their 20s have never, ever been on a date. Now let's compare that to American boys. The average age for a first date is 13. Kind of makes you proud, unless you're the father of a 13-year-old girl. Imagine you're grabbing lunch at a mall in Canada, minding your own business, and a Calgary sheriff hands you a jury duty summons and says, "Tag, you're it." The sheriff uses a court summons called the Talesman Procedure. It means the court ran out of jurors, and random people are being forced to serve with no notice, whether they like it or not. I'm just guessing they don't like it. Two Arkansas men have been arrested for aggravated assault. Police say they took turns shooting at each other while wearing bulletproof vests. What could possibly go wrong? Well, they were only charged with aggravated assault because luckily they're not very good shots. Oh, goody, a Florida story. A man was walking outside his hotel in Tampa when he spotted a dark figure that appeared to be a dog on a long leash. And you know where this is going. According to the cops, the dog with a long leash, of course, was an alligator. And it bit the man's leg as he tried to escape. Now, if you can't tell the difference between a dog and an alligator, you probably should stay out of Florida. And finally, if you're thinking about financing an auto repair loan, you should probably read the fine print. A Utah-based online bank was recently flagged by the National Consumer Law Center for issuing loans with a 189% interest rate. 189%. Even the loan sharks are complaining they can't charge that much. On the podcast today, we have Steve Giles, Chris Evers, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. Really taking us around the world today, from Japan to Canada, all the way down to the foreign country of Florida. Really appreciate, as always, your introductions. Not to mention all the festivals going on, a bit of a festival for the stock market as well. The NASDAQ up 7.5% this week, closing today at 11,608. The S&P 500 up 6.5%, closing at 3912. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average added 5.4% this week, closing today up 826 points for the day to close for the week up, finishing at 31,504. For the year, however, the tech-heavy, growth-heavy NASDAQ still down 25.5%, the S&P down 17.3%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 12.4%, all when adding in dividends. You know, I think, Chris, important place to start for the week, just how significant this rally is. I think what's incredible is that a lot of what we've seen so far this week came in the face of very little news, and certainly even less good news. So you're talking about a week in which, you know, we get a huge rally, but maybe not a ton behind that.
Yeah, for those reading between, you know, the tarot cards for what, you know, drove this strong rally this week, you know, some of the key information that pushed the markets around a little bit was this decrease we've seen in some commodity prices over the last couple weeks, most notably this week, copper being a good example, being down, you know, close to 15 to 20%. We've seen oil prices come down a little bit. You've seen shares in, you know, Exxon and some of the other oil producers come down, which signals to the market, okay, maybe we're seeing a little bit of softness in commodity prices, which has been clearly a pain, you know, in the neck for investors, because inflation has been high and leading to these higher interest rates. And I think that was much the story of the week, and the market rallied on the news of potentially softer commodity prices going forward.
Yeah, I think maybe we've re-entered another environment where good news is bad for markets, bad news is good for markets. You had a number of references this week to the dreaded R-word, recession. And I think as you look at You know, the likelihood of a recession down the road, we always know one is coming. The challenge, of course, is when and how significant it is. You had the Fed Chair Jay Powell this week talk about the possibility. Using the word possibility, you've got folks like Elon Musk and the bank JP Morgan analysts talking about probability now, not just possibility. And so I think the further down that road we go, the more likely it is that, you know, potentially we enter this recessionary period. And, you know, Steve, I know you know this. It's all about earnings and interest rates. The concern for so long, you know, at least so far this year, had been that interest rates continue to rise. You know, I think some of that has started to transition. The yield on the 10-year Treasury moved a bit lower this week. And if recession fear really is the fear driving markets this week, perhaps some of what we've seen is more of a focus on interest rates now than on earnings.
Yeah, I find it odd that after Powell's comments earlier in the week that the 10-year Treasury note kind of cooled off some. And with this economic data that the economy might already be slowing to this point that maybe bad news is good for the market, if the economy is already slowing because of said interest rate hikes that have already taken place, how many more hikes will the Fed make as we move through the rest of the summer? Oh, that could be good for the markets.
Yeah, I think it's so interesting to look at Fed policy in the realm of, okay, well, what does this really mean for stocks, right? Because we need that interest rate to determine what we're willing to pay for future cash flows. We talk quite a bit on this podcast about how you know, you look at the earnings of a company, you try to value what those are worth, and then you discount that future earnings potential to some valuation that you're willing to pay today. And so you look at growth stocks with high earnings. When interest rates were low, you were far more willing to pay a high dollar value. As interest rates rose, you saw growth stocks and the NASDAQ, you know, as kind of representative of some of that, sell off more significantly. Well, interestingly enough, NASDAQ's the leader this week, growth stocks the leader this week as interest rates went the other direction. And so I think, you know, it's nice and neat how that all fits together. Of course, the challenge we face is that good news can only be bad and bad news can only be good for markets for so long. Eventually, you need growth. Eventually, you need, you know, the economy to be strong enough. And so, you know, Joel, a number of economic data points this week that, you know, maybe point to the economy. Again, I think I've used this in the past couple of weeks now, but more of the same, maybe with one exception on the consumer sentiment front.
Yeah, consumer sentiment, Kyle, came in today at its lowest mark ever. It's the University of Michigan survey that goes back decades. I think it's at least since 1978 that they've been measuring this one measure, and it came in at 50 for the month of June. And just to compare, it was 58.4 at the end of May, and it was 85.5 a year ago. So the thing that's holding up consumers is inflation. They're concerned about inflation. 47%, nearly half of all the consumers, blamed inflation, high prices, high rate of rising prices, for lowering their standard of living. And you know, that's back to where it was back in the Great Recession, as far as people citing that specific thing. On the other hand, consumers were saying that they were sort of taking a guess at what the inflation rate would be in the long term, and they said, well, maybe like 3.1%. Well, that's down from 3.3% last month, and it's about where they've been forecasting the long rate, you know, for the past year or so. So on the one hand, they're saying they're really concerned about inflation. On the other hand, when asked to put a number on it, they're saying, you know, long term, maybe it's not that worrisome. And comparing that 3.1% interest inflation rate, that's 8 points. That compares to 8.6% for the latest consumer price index. So there's a difference there.
And Joel, you know, we like to say that consumer confidence, consumer sentiment are important indicators of kind of expectations for the economy. What's interesting to me is just how poor consumer sentiment really is as a predictor for market returns, separating this idea of, you know, what the economic picture looks like over the next 3, 6, 12 months and what market returns look like. And, you know, I think clear that consumers may be responding to some of the pain that's already out there, maybe some of the pain that we're currently going through right now, but maybe less apt to be able to predict the future as far as where things will actually end up.
Sure, it's, you know, the consumer sentiment is seen as a leading indicator of consumer spending, and that's drives 70% of the gross domestic product for the U.S. But there's a disconnect between how people are saying they feel and what they're actually doing. We have seen from any number of indicators that the economy is still doing pretty well. You know, I saw a term this week which I hadn't seen before, revenge travel, that people are actually, you know, despite the high gas prices, despite the concerns about inflation, people are traveling more. They're going out and doing things because they haven't been able to do that the last couple of years. So on the one hand, consumers say they're concerned. On the other hand, they're still spending money.
Steve, I know the consumer picture is one that you pay attention to quite a bit. In particular, as we look at what I think is, as I mentioned earlier, maybe not the greatest predictor of stock market returns. You know, it's important to remember that stock markets are also a leading indicator. And so, if we're talking about consumption or consumer sentiment as a leading indicator, important to remember that the stock market's also a leading indicator. And J.P. Morgan put out a number of research pieces on that consumer sentiment number. We're talking about 8 peaks since 1970, 8 troughs since 1970, and that number. The 12 months following those troughs, the average market return is 24.5%, a little better than 24.5%. The average return after those peaks, when consumers are feeling well, goes very much the other direction. So, I think as we look at, what the expectation is, clear that maybe consumer sentiment isn't necessarily a forecaster for market returns.
No, I think human beings are horrible at trying to time the market. We're always victims of our most recent perceptions, and maybe to the point that Joel was making earlier with respect to spending and consumer sentiment, we're gauging how we feel now, not necessarily how we think we're going to feel in the future. With respect to those consumer confidence numbers in the stock market, I always remind clients that you want to position your portfolio and invest your money based upon where we see things 6, 9, 12, 18 months from now. And a lot of what we're getting from interest rates, a lot of what we're getting from the earnings in the market suggests that, hey, up to this point, the individual investor has really not been very good at timing things. Maybe you should instead focus on the plan and the allocation and not the day-to-day.
Yeah, I think that's critical, Steve, is the understanding that balance is key, the understanding that trying to time the market just gets you out of the market at the absolute wrong time. You know, we have this tendency to feel bad about things and want to do something. And I think you're right. The reality is the thing to do is to focus on what the plan was all along. So I appreciate those comments. I think, critically, as we look at some of what's going on out there right now, I think it's important to note that at least on the corporate America side, we're seeing record spending between share buybacks, dividends. You know, there's been a lot of cash sitting out there, Chris. The same can be said on consumer balance sheets right now, right? That the consumer looks far healthier, that the employment picture looks fairly strong. And so, going back to some of the initial part of the conversation, this risk of recession, maybe it looks a little different now because of just how strong things really are.
Yeah, looking specifically on the business side, I mean, let's take, for example, a business like Google. Google's sitting with over $100 billion of cash above and beyond their existing liabilities on their balance sheet. Right, a company like that has so many opportunities to say, well, do I want to do some mergers and acquisitions, buy another business that might increase our revenue and profits? Do I want to return that to shareholders either via share buybacks or potential dividends down the line? That's just an example of businesses that are out there that actually are in much, much better financial shape than maybe what the stock price would indicate. So stock prices tend to move much more quickly than actual business performance. So when we have these disconnects, when businesses are frankly still performing pretty well from both the balance sheet as well as their incoming cash flows and earnings, that creates opportunities. Now, it doesn't mean that stocks are going to bounce back right away, but it gives these businesses, frankly, opportunities to use that cash that they're sitting on, that extra money that they've essentially built up over, a few solid years of earnings, to redeploy it in other ways, whether that's, growing earnings or reducing the share count that's out there.
You know, Joel, I think jumping around a bit, but just touching back on some of the other economic data, we've looked at the employment picture on a pretty frequent basis just to get an understanding of, okay, what really are the risks that are out there right now? A reminder, of course, that the Fed has this dual mandate of price stability along with full employment. And full employment is the challenge right now, not because we have too many people looking for work, but because we have too much work looking for people. And so we got some more data this week on initial jobless claims. More of the same there. The number may be going up a little bit, but still fairly low.
Right, yeah. So we look at the moving average, the four-week moving average on those claims, just because it's not as volatile as looking at it week to week. And that's as high as it's been since January. So here we are in June, so it's the highest it's been in 5 months. It reached a record low in 55 years of data in early April. And every week since then, it's gone up. But again, it's like 40% lower than the average since 1967 when this first began. The employment picture's looking a little not as good as before, but it still looks pretty good. And getting back to consumer sentiment, that's the number one force in what makes you feel good about your personal finances, right? Is whether you've got a job or prospects for a job, whether that job seems to be paying you pretty well. And as long as we have that mismatch between, you know, more jobs than there are people to fill them, there's leverage that employees get in as far as, you know, feeling that confidence, and that should support continued consumer spending.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's the critical piece. And it all comes back to this conversation that Jay Powell had in his conversation this week, that any number of, you know, business leaders are having when they talk about recession is, you know, I think the risk is always saying this time is different. But for a variety of reasons, this time looks different than the others. And one of the big ones is that the employment picture just looks very different this time around. That businesses have been less willing to let go of employees, that employees have more upward mobility, they have better wage, better say in what their actual hourly rate is going to be. And so, you know, I think that all points to an economy that's a bit stronger this time than what we've been dealing with in the past.
And Chair Powell was saying that, I mean, the tools that the Fed have, that they're blunt tools. They're not surgical tools. So, you know, what they're trying to do will take some time to notice, and it won't be easy. So they're kind of messing around with stuff and not really knowing exactly what will happen. And when he says that, you know, there's a possibility, actually he said certainly possibility of recession, it's a possibility. So that can happen.
Well, and the tools that the Fed has, Joel, are also only on one side of the equation. We're talking about supply-demand. Anytime that you have price movement with respect to inflation, prices go up because either you have more demand or you have less supply. Obviously, we've been suffering from high demand and low supply. The Fed, through monetary policy, has been raising interest rates in an effort to decrease demand, and those effects aren't going to be felt for a while. I guess the easiest way to explain that would be the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was at 3% at the beginning of the year. We're almost double that now. If that doesn't turn off some people from buying a new home, I don't know what will. But that is going to eventually have this ripple effect through the economy as borrowing costs go up. You know, your dollars that you earn from your job aren't going to go as far, whether that's in paying more interest on a credit card or having to borrow money to buy a car. But it only is controlled on the demand side by the Fed, not the supply side, but that's where the businesses come in.
Great point, Steve. Chris, you, I'm sure, getting a lot of conversations right now, seeing a lot of articles about some planning opportunities as we look at, you know, just what this market sell-off has meant. Certainly, you know, some opportunities maybe for tax loss harvesting. To sell some positions in a taxable account, not even necessarily make changes to your overall allocation, but sell a intermediate term high quality bond fund for a different intermediate term high quality bond fund, just to benefit from the tax loss, but potentially some other tax planning strategies as well as we look at what a potential correction or what in the midst of a correction, but a potential return to higher prices someday in the future might mean.
Yeah, it's a good reminder of what, you know, the role of the advisor is in many of these situations. It's, we're not just helping people decide, you know, should I be 60% in stock, 65%? Should I, you know, be investing in this area of the market? We're helping people kind of manage retirement cash flow needs. And for somebody that has been looking at an opportunity to move money into a Roth IRA and do a Roth conversion, well, when the market's down, and you're starting to see more articles out there talking about this, when the market's down, you have an opportunity to convert some pre-tax money in your traditional IRA, pay the taxes on those shares at a depressed valuation and move them into a Roth. And theoretically, you know, the market recovers, you get tax-free growth on that money going forward. Now, it's much more complicated than just saying, well, stocks are down, therefore I must do a Roth conversion. You got to take into consideration, what's your marginal tax rate? Does it make sense for you to do this now versus, hey, maybe you'll be in a lower tax bracket in 5 years. Why would I take money out of a pre-tax account now to pay a tax at a higher marginal tax rate? That's what you got to sit down with somebody and have a conversation about, you know, likely both your tax preparer and your advisor. But there's tools out there to take advantages of the changing environment. So always view changes that are going on as an opportunity to take advantage and do something different. Now might be a time to be considering that as well, if the situation applies.
Chris, I see some of those articles about Roth conversions, and it always, when I start reading them, I always sort of feel like it's going to tell me, is this something you should do?
Yeah.
But it all boils down to it's an individual thing.
Yeah, they don't always get to see your last year's tax return and be able to tell you yes or no, it makes sense. But you got to have some of that information to know.
Well, and I think that's the critical piece, right? That we don't give tax advice. We really do give investment advice. Mm-hmm. But there's so much overlap sometimes between the right investment strategy and the right tax strategy that it involves conversations with multiple professionals, whether that's a CPA or tax attorney, whether that's your financial advisor or whatever other pieces may need to be a part of that conversation. But I think it's an important conversation to have, and important that when you're having it, that you understand what all the components of that are. So, right, what was my last year's tax rate? Where do I think I'll be this year? What kinds of other tax considerations might be out there? Things like IRMA, right, the additional cost on Medicare, if you recognize income above a certain threshold in a year. All those are important considerations. And so the more eyes you have on that, the better you should feel about making the right choice. And when we're talking about sometimes decisions that could amount to thousands of dollars in tax savings, it's worth it to pay a couple of hundred dollars to have the CPA go over your things with you one more time this year than you otherwise would have. And so, you know, I think critical to get it right, important to know what the options are, but even more important to kind of take advantage of them in the way that's most appropriate for you. Well, we enjoy doing the program for you, as always, and we will talk to you again next week.